computer to go through the app.
That's right. The Navy was supposed to do any smoke screening that was required.
Mm-hmm. How clear was vision on the beach during withdrawal? Was it fairly clear?
Oh, yes.
No smoke, no haze?
No, not a damn thing. I could see well out to sea and well down towards Poorville, mm-hmm. or I mean towards the proper terminal.
Could you really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I could see you. I'd say the visibility mile and a half down, mm-hmm. quite easily.
Now, from the commanding headlands on either side,
yeah.
Was it mainly machine gun fire, or were there heavier?
It was hard to tell whether it was mortar and light infantry guns.
Mm-hmm.
The Germans have a light infantry gun. I was of the opinion, and I've never found otherwise, that they had some light infantry guns dug in, as well as mortars.
That hasn't previously been there or have
previously been there, dug in gun emplacements.
Yeah.
Up on the, around there, below the RDF station.
Mm-hmm. On the other side, wasn't there supposed to have been a commando attack to neutralize much of the defense on that side?
Not
that farther off the.
Not on our, not near us, no.
No, that was Lord Lovett on the other side of the FSSR. Yeah. Tell me a bit about the boys' anti-tank rifle. Had that not been displaced by the Piat at this point?
Not at that stage.
No, but you were still using that.
We still had the old boys' anti-tank, and actually, as I say, we used it at this, I will call it, emplacement, as I say, whether it was mortar or gun, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
We could see every time it fired, we could see the camouflage nets wave in the breeze.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did, we were sniping at it and using our Bren guns on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd fire a few rounds and it would stop firing. And every time we stopped, it would let go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it went on all more until we got out of there. Mm-hmm.
Was the boys very accurate for that kind of firing?
Oh, most accurate, especially when you can spot with your binoculars.
Mm-hmm. And I know that Pete only had an effective range of 150 yards, something like that?
It wouldn't be any good for that type of thing that we were using it for, because we were shooting uphill.
Yeah.
At, say, just below the brow of the hill at this dugout emplacement.
Mm-hmm. What sort of hitting power would boys have? Would it be very effective on a pillbox?
No, unless it went through the slit. You're always hoping that you're going to get it through the slit and then ricochet around inside. But it wouldn't go through all the concrete, no way.
Did you have one to each platoon, or just one each section?
One, I can't recall, but I'd say basically it was one per platoon was the scale. Now, how many were carried on the up? I don't really know,
mm-hmm.
by from memory.
I can remember listening to a tape of a Major General Ross, who was one of the Camerons.
Yeah.
And he said that one of the fellows in his company had a German POW carry his boys, and he didn't want to carry it. It was too darn heavy, and he was sort of butting along with his way Enfield. Which I thought was kind of funny. On the way back, and once you had reached England, what sort of thoughts did you have of the raid itself? Or were you thinking at this point of what you had accomplished, what had it been?
No, I don't think you have time to think, because by this time you're dead weary.
Yeah.
And you're more concerned of what's happening, when are the rest coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly, as I say, the reports come in, then you realize there are not any more coming back.
But when did you learn Merritt had been captured?
I can't recall. It would be days after that we realized that. I don't think we knew in essence that he was captured. We knew he hadn't returned.
Mm-hmm.
I can't recall how long it took before we knew officially that he was captured.
What about McTavish? Had he been captured?
He was captured.
Okay. What about casualties for the battalion and for your company in specific? Were they heavy?
I can't recall the number. I mean, I have no way of knowing now the number officially killed.
Mm-hmm.
I can't recall that. All I know is that the number of us who got home was damn small, as I say, around 8 of us.
Mm-hmm.
One lance corporal, 2 officers, and the rest were private.
And when they'd all been, I'd all returned, all that would return, that was it, 8?
That's it.
Uh-huh. And how many were wounded of your company that returned?
I would say those who got back, none.
Really?
Yeah.
So your company was extraordinarily heavily hit in terms of casualties as opposed to the others?
I couldn't even say that, because I would have to go to the official records now and
mm-hmm.
see how many went,
yeah.
and then how many were PWs, and from that work out who was killed and died of wounds, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I've got the numbers for the battalion, but I was kind of interested in your particular company.
I couldn't tell you now from memory at all.
And you said the Cavish was captured?
Yes.
Okay. Did you become acting company commander?
Yes.
With the rank of captain?
I was a subaltern commander in the company.
But of course it wasn't much of a company, was it?
No, they reinforced us very rapidly, as a matter of fact. They brought in a lot of Canadian, Scottish, and other officers.
Mm-hmm.
And I suddenly found myself as a lieutenant commanding what was to be a new company, and I had a captain second in command.
How did you manage that?
Well, things were a bit dicey for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly, we'd moved to another camp to Curdford, and we were training. When I realized there was a certain amount of, you might say, unrest in my company.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still a lieutenant. But we were all sleeping in nesting huts, and there was all the officers in one company, all slept, you know, side by side down this nesting hut.
Mm-hmm.
And one night, I went back to the company office, and my sergeant major was there, Shorty Warren, and I just got a letter the other day that he's just died.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Sergeant Major, and I said, what is wrong in this company and what is going on that I can't find out about? He said, sir, that too I see. He's telling the troops just because they've been to Dieppe doesn't mean to say they know every goddamn thing. And that he's a captain and he should be commanding the company, not you.
Mm-hmm.
I simply said, thank you, Sergeant Major. Of course, by this time, my temper is getting a bit short.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to the hut. He wasn't there. I crawled into bed, woke up in the morning, looked over, and sure enough, he was right beside me in the next bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still mad, so I rolled out of bed and grabbed him by the scruff of the neck and hauled him out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
I told him what I'd heard, and I said, now, you son of a bitch, you either do as you're told or I'll kill you right here. Now, what are you going to do? And I would have.
Mm-hmm.
I was furious. I'd have beat the hell right out of him right there.
Could you understand his feelings? Of being a captain, being
yes.
commanded by the captain.
Yes, but I've always gone on the assumption if he's got any grief or gripe, he should eyeball it with me, not behind my back.
Mm-hmm. Was he a Canadian Scottish officer?
No, he was not. He was from a Saskatchewan unit.
Mm-hmm.
I shan't mention any names.
Okay. Did he stay with the unit?
No, eventually he was sent down to Africa.
Okay. Whereabouts in Africa?
He joined the Loyal Eddies, actually.
And then went to North Africa?
Well, he did, originally, and then he ended up in Italy. But
mm. Okay.
Did quite a good job in action with the Loyal Edmontons.
Did he survive?
Yes. He died of cancer here about 2 years ago.
Mm. Okay, how long did it take the battalion to get up to strength again?
Oh, we were up to strength very rapidly. I can't recall in days, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
probably when you say up to strength, I imagine because of the shortage of certain technical or specialists, we took a while,
mm-hmm.
but basically, as far as the rifle company was concerned, we were up to strength very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
In a matter of about 2 weeks.
What were the quality of the men that came in?
Good.
Mm-hmm.
They needed training. We had had a very well-trained battalion at DF. It took quite a while to bring them almost back to that level when we were once more denuded of all our good trained people, and they were sent off as reinforcements down to the Mediterranean theater.
Really? They took your good people from you?
Oh, a lot of them, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So here again, we had no sooner trained to this pitch, and here we are on a downhill again because they've taken so many away from us. And we got another flood of green reinforcements, and we had to start all over to train again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I left with a very short day after, when I say shortly, in a matter of months, I guess. And so I went as liaison officer to 2D headquarters, and then I went down to D Group headquarters as a staff captain, and then I went to the 9th Brigade Assault Brigade, which was church man, and we were to be frozen for the assault. And I knew from my conversation with Freddie Clift, who was our colonel, that if I wanted my promotion to major and to command my company, I had to return immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been told I was going to be frozen as a captain to remain at the Assault Brigade. So I saw the BM, Peter Bennett, who saw Churchman. Churchman said, if your CO will phone me and state he wishes you to return and you're going to command your company, he said, I'll release you.
Mm-hmm.
So Freddie Cliff phoned him, and I was on my way the next day, and he wrote a nice little letter to say that, and I have the original letter signed by him,
mm-hmm.
simply saying mm-hmm. that I was returned under some specific RO routine order, which basically stated that unsuitable RLEs noxious could be returned. But he wanted them to know that I was being returned under this RO, but not because I was unsuitable, but because I was going to be promoted to command and captain.
Mm-hmm.
And that as far as he was concerned, I was an excellent liaison officer and I would be welcome anywhere.
Mm-hmm. When did this occur?
That would be December 43, January 44.
Mm-hmm. What I was going to ask, Cliff, you mentioned, was now the commander at the time.
That's right.
Had he taken over after the DFRA?
No, Kempton, who had originally been...
A lieutenant, wasn't
it? No, this was the older Kempton.
He had been killed at DF, I can remember reading something.
This was an older man who had been sent from the battalion down, was running the holding unit.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was an older militia officer.
That's right.
And was his term very long?
No, he just came in on a temporary basis.
Mm-hmm.
To do the reorganization, because he knew the people and knew what and why. And I guess while they were looking for a new CO, and it was only a matter of a few weeks before they posted in Freddie Clift.
Mm-hmm. And how long did he remain?
Well, Freddie Clift commanded right straight through until he became a brigadier in Normandy.
Mm-hmm.
That would be August, September, say September 44.
Mm-hmm.
And then then they had a series of temporary COs, and I think Bernstadt was the last one who went in who took them right through to the end of the war.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a few general questions about the app?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. 40 years after, and we're getting close to the 40th anniversary in a few weeks, what are your thoughts on it now? And I know you've probably been asked that many times, but...
I have no specific thoughts about it. I think too much is made of it.
You think so?
I think so. It's a big thing in the SSR, and there's always that faction. I always say the SSR is sort of a number of different units. There are sort of those who belong to it in militia days and enlisted with it.
Mm-hmm.
Those who went to Dieppe with it. Those who trained with it and went to Europe with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all those who flooded through as reinforcements throughout the campaign in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So the battalion means many things to many people. There is a strong faction because so many of them were, when I say so many, 200, between 200 and 300, I think, were PWs.
Mm-hmm.
That element always seems to turn up at all the reunions, or a good many of them,
mm-hmm.
and a lot is made within the association of the DF. I've heard many an officer stood up and said, look, that's only one operation, there are lots of others,
mm-hmm.
and DF was just one, so why get so excited about it?
Yeah.
I think basically the reason for it is that a lot of the people who went to DF came from the Esteban area, which was the hometown of the regiment,
mm-hmm.
and there was father and son and brothers all went, and in some cases, like the father didn't come back, and the son came back, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think they make too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
It was an operation like many others. I think it was significant only in that I do agree with, I think, what Mountbatten has said, that a lot of the things they developed and techniques used arose out of DF.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, when I was with the assault brigade, just prior to D-Day, I saw nothing there, basically, when I say there, within the infantry unit, that we hadn't devised in ourselves,
mm-hmm.
training for DF. The bigger changes came in, like the dual drives, the DD tanks.
Mm-hmm. The Mulberry, I suppose.
Yes, that was one. But then they had rocket firing ships and that type of thing that was supposed to blast its way through the wire and this sort of stuff. Well, I was at the test zone before D-Day on some of these things, and they were a fiasco.
Mm-hmm.
Just didn't work with a damn.
Yeah. A lot of the funny tanks, I should think, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about, so you think it was justified then in that it did show and bring to light things that were used later?
I think so, but the only thing, the only when I look at it from a purely academic military point of view, it recalls the comments we made as young officers. When we were being briefed on the Isle of Wight and we were doing the study periods, we always said, now, we were informed that, we could land and we would gain surprise and get inland on, say, to this four wind farm, which is what, somewhere between 400 and 600 yards from where we were to land.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, well, now, how is it that we can do that, and yet when we're on the coast defense in Britain, you contend that the Germans can't attain the same surprise on us.
Mm-hmm.
We felt we could not get that type of surprise, we wanted more heavy aerial bombardment
mm-hmm.
throughout the whole area, and we wanted tanks on our beach. They said the intelligence was that the bottom wasn't right on our beach for tanks, and if we'd had tanks on our beach, it might have been a completely different story.
Mm-hmm.
And from the, I understand it may have been Churchill who called off the bombing because of the French civilians.
Also, it had to do, I think, with the destruction and the fact that if you destroy the inner parts of the town, the tanks can't move. But I think it was mainly destruction for the French population.
French population is what I heard.
Yeah. Tell me, do you think the loss, though, was justified in what was gained? Do you not think that much of what was learned could have been learned through common sense and through such landings as in Italy and in North Africa? Or that you had to breach some defended port to get that out of the Allied system?
Well, I think this was the kind of, you know, the two schools of thought. Can you assault a fortified sort of port, or must you go to the flanks?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they hadn't found that out, they wouldn't have had the great flood of assault craft that they required to do that. You must recall at this stage it was the number of assault craft was very limited,
yeah.
And the knowledge of this type of operation was very limited.
Nothing had been done since Gallipoli in the First World War.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it was only later that, you know, that in South Africa when the Americans came in and they got more of these landing craft, that people started to learn what to do. But the landings in Sicily, when heavy, were a piece of cake compared to the type of thing we ran into.
Well, in Sicily, there meant no opposition or very light Italian resistance.
Yeah.
What about the political aspects of it? And it's something, being something of a historian, that I try to look at it from an objective standpoint. And I don't know if you've done much reading of Dieppe since the war. A lot of people who are in it tend not to, because...
I think I've read practically every book that's out on it.
How do you feel about the theory that Churchill was trying to placate both the Americans and the Russians, showing them that a second front was unfeasible in 1942? Because the Americans, especially Marshall, was drumming for that.
Well, I think Churchill was right from a technical point of view, in that there just wasn't the assault craft and wherewithal to mount such an invasion.
Mm-hmm. Especially numbers.
Yeah, there's no way. You know, and I suppose this was, you might say, a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
One that had a political aim, vis-a-vis the Russian, and it had a strategic aim to see who was right and how you're going to assault
mm-hmm.
The coast of France.
Do you think if one or the other were lacking, that the raid would not have been held?
I don't quite follow that question.
Okay. If the high command needed the expertise gained at Dieppe, and yet the political pressure was not there, would it still, in your eyes, have been carried out? It seems to me that there was a great deal of political pressure behind the move by Churchill. And I know we're getting into...
I wouldn't like to comment on that, because it would just be conjecture on my part, not based on fact.
Conjecture is fun sometimes.
Yeah, sure. But it's not based on fact, and unless one has done the research on the documents and the diaries and everything that's available, there's no way. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hello.
Good evening.
We're on tape. Do you want to be on tape?
No, I'm going to look at the paper and see what...
Would you care for a cup of tea?
I'd love a cup of tea. Why don't we end it right there?
Do you think you could put the...
Okay, we're back again. Okay, let's wrap up Dieppe. And I think we talked before, and you were back company commander early part of 1944.
That's right.
Okay, you're a major now.
I became a major, let me think. Early 44, yes, I've forgotten. February, March 44.
Okay.
February, I guess.
Back to D Company?
No, I think I ended up with B Company.
B Company. Okay, and Cliff is the commander?
Cliff is CEO.
Okay, how had the battalion changed in your brief hiatus?
No, I didn't find much change in the battalion. They were still the same hard training, hard working battalion.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say the strong officers were still strong and the weak officers were still weak.
How about the level of training of the battalion itself?
Quite good.
Mm-hmm.
Quite good.
How about morale?
Excellent.
Had that deteriorated at all after the action?
Not a bit.
So it was high all the way through?
Not a bit. I don't ever recall a time when morale was particularly low.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the lowest it ever got would be the winter of 41-42, when we were at Lewis when we had poor rations, as you recall, when I said that that beautiful meatloaf that the troops referred to as horse cock, that they wouldn't eat that. That was about as bad as any. You couldn't get a new battle dress. You had to wear Pat's battle dress. Difficult to get enough to eat, that type of thing. That was a rough winter.
Well, what about when you learned or heard the news that POWs had been manacled?
That's right.
Did that raise or did that lower morale?
I don't think it adversely affected anybody. It depended really on each individual.
Mm-hmm.
Some got annoyed about it. Some couldn't have cared less. Didn't happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot didn't understand the reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
It was made a political thing. But I don't think basically the soldier got too excited about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're in early 44. What? I suppose you could see that the invasion of the mainland was coming.
Oh, it was obvious that everything was headed this way, because you could see the movement and concentration of troops and supplies in the south.
Where were you concentrated this time?
By this time, first we're in Worthing, and then we move over to camp, can't even think of the name of it,
mm-hmm.
north of Dover.
Folkestone?
No, quite a bit north of Dover. I can't recall the name of the camp.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. It was in the camp.
Yeah.
And we were given this task, of putting all our vehicles out and putting tarps over them and taking the tarps off, making them look like something that they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the period when the first buzz bombs flew over the camp and all this sort of nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody knew it was going to happen. The only question was when. Everybody was confined. You weren't allowed to travel here or there or somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody realized it was just a matter of days or weeks, or maybe some kind, maybe a month. We knew what our role was going to be. We knew we were not going to be in the assault.
Why was that?
Well, we knew that we were not our division was not the assault division.
Second, I suppose training had been carried out. By
and that's
division.
Right. And our basic air training, emphasis had been on the advance to contact,
mm-hmm.
and the attack, well, of course, and defense, but not the assault over beach walls and things of that nature.
But how is that type of training carried out by large scale exercises?
Well, you start out within your own battalion,
mm-hmm.
from company and battalion exercises. And you go to brigade and division exercises, and then you do a few higher formation exercises, corps and army,
mm-hmm.
until everybody gets shook out. Let them all have a go at knowing how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different thing to set and actually plan a thing on paper, but when things go wrong, to be able to have the art of command to sort them out,
mm-hmm.
that's a different thing entirely.
Perhaps that was part of the lessons learned at DF.
I would think so.
Yeah.
Communications were very poor, actually, at Dieppe, as far as I personally am concerned, because having lost my wireless operator and wherever he got to, I don't know, but even on the set we had that we got from McCammon's,
mm-hmm.
We couldn't contact our own battalion headquarters. They sent no runners to us. Any runners we sent never came back. The group I had were working on a void.
How did the communication improve between Dieppe and 1944?
I think our sets improved, number one. I think people were trained to be more communication conscious.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, once you're in close combat, there's very little influence you're going to do with a wireless set.
Mm-hmm.
It's only at the higher level that communications play a role.
Mm-hmm.
And for the use of artillery to bring support and that sort of thing. But at the lower level, no way.
Well, how low are you speaking? Company level?
Oh, within a company, wireless. In the heat of battle, wireless, you might as well forget.
Mm-hmm. It surely helps to coordinate an attack or defense if you have communications with the central corps being the company commander.
Well, to your platoon commanders, if you're out where you're influencing the battle,
mm-hmm.
you're there.
And a good company commander should be there.
And I particularly always had my communications move behind me with my sergeant major,
mm-hmm.
because I went forward with a runner, my batman, and by a system of signals and whistles, I could direct my company anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Change it at a moment's notice, change any formation, change the direction of attack or anything.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't learn the art of command at the company level very well.
Mm-hmm. Did it come naturally for you, or come easily for you?
Oh, very easily. To me, tactics and training are just like having two arms.
Mm-hmm. Whereas for some people it doesn't come naturally.
They never, ever achieve it.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? Is it something inbred, or is it something one learns?
I think you learn it, but I think it's something you have an intuitive feel for. I was always the boil in the battalion that was always challenging everything and saying, how can we improve this or do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I can recall Freddie Cliff once getting exasperated with me and said, God damn it, John, you want to drill for everything. My reaction to that is basically, I like to know a procedure for any type of emergency,
mm-hmm.
Because if you've thought the problem out in advance, you can react to the emergency without having to think of the solution first.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always questioning doctrine, and typical thing is when you pull out, you always take out your Vickers guns first. And I say that's bloody nonsense, because you want your heaviest firing weapons, longest firing weapons, out in the shop window protecting the poor little infantryman as he gets out.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that battle right in the school of infantry with the commandant. And the only reason they could give me for not moving, for not leaving them there, was the book said so. And I said, that's not a good enough answer.
Had this been applied in actual combat in Normandy?
Oh, in Normandy they followed the book. In other words, pull them out.
Yeah.
I don't believe in that.
Yeah.
Of course, mind you, we were always on the move, so I mean, a defense and withdrawal were not the vogue in those days. So we may have withdrawn when we had the hell beat out of us,
mm-hmm.
but that's a different thing than an organized withdrawal.
Yeah.
But then we'll come to that next time, I guess, if we're going to deal with Normandy, mm-hmm. because that's a different kettle of fish.
A whole new ball of wax, to use another cliche.
Yeah. Oh, no, the... No, training generally in Europe, I thought, was good. Of course, Battle Drill had come in, that had really livened things up at the platoon company level.
Had you not had that before yet?
It had started in a minor way.
Was that an effective device?
It was a very good tool, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
An extremely good tool.
Again, it would help to develop a sense for battle, because...
That's right.
And it would also weed out those who couldn't function.
It was basically... You might say a prepared reaction to a set of circumstances,
mm-hmm.
so that if you were shot, you did something. If you were shot at,
mm-hmm.
you just didn't lay down and try to hide.
You intuitively
down,
react.
Crawl, observe, fire type of deal,
Yeah.
Don't get up where you went down, roll over to a flank, observe, try to bring fire to bear on them, and all this jazz. It was all a positive approach rather than a negative approach.
Mm-hmm. So it taxed the man's power of improvisation.
That's right, and it got the junior NCO thinking. Of how to react in a situation. If he's given a few simple rules to follow, well, he'll follow.
Yeah. What were the quality of your junior NCOs? Because the good ones have been weeded out and made officers, I think, by about this time, haven't they?
Yes, this was always a constant problem, but I don't think to get a group of good NCOs, but I think it was always a question of training them to the level that you want. I basically did this in my own company during training. I used to walk beside the section leader and question him as we were marching or on an exercise. What would you do if this happened? What would you do if that happened? And discuss with him his reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And if I felt he was wrong, point out why I think he should react a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And by so doing, you soon found out the knowledge that they had. And then when you went on an exercise, you could very quickly find out if they could apply it.
Mm-hmm.
I can think of some very nice people, friends from my boyhood days, where the mother thought I was always down on her sons. Her sons were nice people, but they weren't good leaders.
Yeah. Was that difficult, dealing with people you had known before and had been friends with, perhaps gone to school with?
Not really. I think perhaps I didn't find it difficult, perhaps they did. I never let it bother me. The mere fact that I had people under command who were old enough to be my father didn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
In my early days, the majority of the people I had were older than me.
You were quite young at that time, weren't you?
Yeah.
Early 20s.
I was 21 when I went overseas.
Mm-hmm. But in 1940 when I was here.
So, unless in 1942, I was about 23 when I was commanding the company?
And grown considerably, I suppose.
You learn quick.
Yeah, very quickly, especially in the science. Okay, lead me up to the time you went overseas, from the time you got back to company, from battalion, until you went to France.
Well, we went, as I say, we were in, first in Worthing,
mm-hmm.
where we were training on the downs. We did a lot of infantry contact training, all types of normal infantry training, live firing exercises, had an Oh, yes, when I had in my company, we had a premature explosion in the EY rifle, killed two of my best sergeants.
Really? On what kind of rifle?
EY. That's a grenade discharger.
I see. Was that a new innovation, or is it?
No, it's something like the, in other words, it's the old discharger cup on the end of the old 303, something similar to what they had in World War
I. Mm-hmm. So that was faulty, exploded, and killed two sergeants.
Very messy. You know, they had done all sorts of training. They'd used the bombed out areas down in Portsmouth as a street fighting area and all sorts of things. So I would say the knowledge and level of training was as good as it was going to be short of actual combat.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I found wrong with the whole thing...
Can I stop you right there for a sec, just to change the tape?